Today is Tu B'Shvat, beginning tonight, and the Paiskim are all baffled by why exactly we don't say Tachanun on this day. I don't think anyone is really complaining. Doesn't take too much of excuses to try to get out of Tachanun. I had a Talmud who once told me that he wanted to write a book on Tachanun, and he wanted to call it, What Did Tachanun Ever Do to You? For some reason, people like getting out of Tachanun. There's a tremendous simcha that only a Yid could understand how a day that there's a chasen in the room on a day of Urachim, that special tainug, the Eden HaNefesh that a person gets from avoiding Tachanun. If we'd only know what Tachanun really was, the Tachnunim that we say, we supplicate to the Rabbeinu Shalom on these days. But Tu B'Shvat is one of those days that we don't say Tachanun. And the Paiskim don't understand this. The Paiskim really grapple with what exactly is the great Yontif. If there was a Nes, if there was a Yeshua, if there was Hanukkah, there was Purim, there was some great event that happened in Jewish history that was a salvation, a Yeshua for Klal Yisrael, Mela, we don't say Tachanun, it's a Yontif. What exactly is the greatness of the day of Tu B'Shvat that should warrant Chazal to say, this is the day that we're being Mevatel Tachanun for Gans Klal Yisrael? What happened today? What goes on in the world that we should exempt ourselves from saying this special Tachanun Tefillah? It's also very strange that if you go out today on the Rosh Hashanah Leilanos and you're looking around at the trees, you take a walk in the lander, what do they call this here?
Quad.
The quad. I don't think that there could be a worse day to look at a tree. These are days that are dark, they're dingy, the trees are completely dead. I don't think there are any leaves on the tree. I didn't go out beforehand to check it out, but unless it's some of these weird, you know, full all year round bushes, but the trees are pretty dead. There's no leaves left after fall and a deep winter. There's just nothing but parched earth and dark grimness to the night, and the trees are dead. This is not a Rosh Hashanah Leilanos. You want to see Rosh Hashanah Leilanos, go in the springtime, go to the botanical garden, you see trees in full bloom, you see the beautiful fruit trees and flowery trees. Those are a time that you could declare that it's Rosh Hashanah Leilanos. But a day like today, this is a Rosh Hashanah Leilanos. This is the day that the trees are the barest. The trees are the least boastful. And this is the yontif for the Ilanis. So Chazal teach us something very, very important about today. It's true that the trees seem to be dead, and they are. There's no greater death in the lifespan, the annual lifespan of a tree than right now. But something is percolating underneath, in the deep recesses of the tree, in the bottom, in the roots of the tree, something is beginning today. The sap, which is like the lifeblood of the tree, is beginning to rise. It's beginning to flow, and it's beginning to go up the stem of the tree, the bark of the tree. And it's going to spread throughout all of the branches of the tree. And eventually, over the course of the next few months, it will bring new life to the leaves of the tree, to the fruit of the tree, to the buddings of the tree. It all begins today. On the day of death, on the day that there is so little that seems alive about the tree, that's precisely when the life begins. Ironically, And this Rabbi Yisai is the great Yisaid that Tu B'Shvat offers us. Tu B'Shvat teaches us that in order to grow, you must first experience darkness. If a person has a life that's constantly easy, that's never filled with any challenge, that you never have any agitation, you never have stress, you never have challenge, you never have sleepless nights, you never have anything to worry about, that seems like a gifted life. It seems like a blessed life. The problem with that type of life is that you never, ever grow. You never are able to rise to any challenge, to be able to strengthen your inner core, to be able to prove to yourself who you really are, what you're made of. Because everything is easy street. We obviously daven that we shouldn't come lidei nisayon. We're not asking. We don't put ourselves voluntarily into challenges. We obviously will always prefer to have an easier course than a hard course. Nobody davens, nor should we daven for challenges and headaches and stresses, because we want to have a certain menuchas hanefesh. We need it in order to learn, in order to daven, in order to be a normal human being. But when life does present challenges and stress, and it seems sometimes unbearable, and I think we all know, we've all experienced that probably in our lives, in one form or another, or maybe on a constant basis, I hope not, but maybe on a very, very frequent basis, then you should know that all of those emotions, as terrible in the moment as they seem, are really stepping stones for greatness. The greatness that a person will attain comes from the darkness that he lives through. I heard once a recording from Rabbi Dr. Aaron Chwersky. He was a very famous psychiatrist who wrote over 80 books. He's a very prolific author. And he specialized in addiction. And I once heard him say in a different time that he's also an addict. He's addicted to writing books. He has an addiction. It's an addiction like any other addiction. He happened to specialize in drugs and narcotics. He had a special clinic, I think, in Pittsburgh, one of the top clinics for these types of addictions. He's written Haggadahs just based on the story of Yetzias Mitzrayim in the context of people being addicted, being slaves to their addictions. But this was his expertise. And he once said, he was a very wise man. He was a big Talmud Chacham as well. He was Nifter, I believe, during COVID. And he said something very, very interesting, that he was once in the dentist's office and he was reading a magazine while he was waiting for the dentist. And the magazine had an article. And the article was about lobsters and how lobsters are able to grow. Because if you think about it, it should be impossible for a lobster to grow. A lobster has this very solid armor, this shell around it, and the shell really should restrict it from growing. It should all lobsters should be very, very small by nature. So how are they able to grow? Sometimes you see these lobsters, you know, in pictures or whatnot, and they're huge, right? They're very big lobsters. How does that happen? So he was reading about it, and he said that the article says that when a lobster feels like claustrophobic inside of that shell, and it feels that agitation, and it feels like that the constriction of being in the metzar of a shell, it goes to a rock underneath the water, it hides, and because it doesn't want to be vulnerable and prey to other fish in the sea that might attempt to go for it once its shell and its claws are off, but it basically sheds its shell, and then it grows to the next size, and then it grows a new shell to protect it. And then as time passes and it gets even bigger, it grows even bigger, and it feels again that agitation, it can't contain itself inside of that shell, then it goes again under a rock and it sheds that shell, it grows, and then a new shell forms. And what Dr. Chorsky took from this is a very big insight in life, exactly what we're saying this evening, that growth requires agitation. In order to grow, the lobster of all creatures teaches, we're not allowed to eat a lobster. It seems really actually a disgusting type of, you know, whatever it is to eat, but people obviously like it very much. I don't know how they could eat it. It's just I can't get past the look of it. But it does teach us a tremendous mussar. Mikol malamdei yiskaltu, we could even learn from a lobster that in order to grow, the only way to facilitate growth is through agitation, is by having that stress, by that constriction, by those moments of intense pain and challenge in life. And if you don't die from those moments, you grow from those moments. Whatever won't kill you makes you stronger. Throughout Jewish history, we have seen this again and again. The greatest growth of Klal Yisrael, the greatest blessings that Klal Yisrael have experienced throughout history is not in the good times. It's precisely after they have been faced with challenges that are beyond human comprehension, then and only then, not coincidentally, instead of going and completely vanishing into the dustbins of history, as all the other great superpowers have throughout history, Klal Yisrael somehow magically gets stronger. Just a few examples, the Bayesheni. The Bayesheni was a tkufa of greatness, and then there was a churban of the Bayesheni. The churban Bayesheni, if you read the Gemara in Gittin, involved the death and torture and humiliation of millions and millions of Yidden. The Romans came in, they massacred Jews, they took them captive, hostage, they brought them back to Rome, they paraded them through the streets of Rome with all of the booty from the Beis HaMikdash. It was a nightmare of a period of event. Imagine you have the Beis HaMikdash, Bivinyana, the great bias of Hordas, the beautiful, most beautiful bias. Kol Misha Leira, Binyan Hordas Leira, Binyan Na Miyamav, the Gemara Bava Basra says that if you never saw, you want to see beautiful architecture, you have to see the Binyan of Hordas. And it was destroyed. And Klal Yisrael went into Golos, and that should have been the end of Klal Yisrael. That was it. We lost our Makom HaMikdash. But instead, as a result of the Churban, or in the aftermath of the Churban, all of a sudden we had a tremendous rebirth. And all of the Torah Shebaal Peh, the great parts of Torah Shebaal Peh, from Rabbi Akiva, the great Tanoim, and then going into the period of the Amoraim, all comes about after the Churban Bayesheni. Was that a coincidence? It wasn't a coincidence. It's because Klal Yisrael experienced tremendous stress, the darkness, the Cheshech of Bavel, the challenge to Klal Yisrael's existence. From that challenge precisely comes the Yeshua. If you fast forward in history, you have periods, the Crusades was also the bloodiest periods in history. We have no idea what was going on during these periods in Europe of the Crusades, when in the name of religion, these crusaders went from city to city throughout Europe and literally slaughtered man, woman, and child, all in the name of God. And also, that should have been the end. So many of the kinnis that we say on Tisha B'Av is about the period of the Crusades throughout Germany and Western Europe and other parts and Eastern. What happened after the Crusades, or in that period right after the Crusades, the Rishayim, Rashi, the Balei Taisus, all the great Rishayim that we have, came about right after the Crusades. Again, the Tu B'Shvat lesson, the lesson of from darkness comes the sap of life. When it seems dead, when things are most challenging, from that moment precisely, just be prepared for greatness. The Spanish Inquisition, another crazy dark period. And what comes out after the Spanish Inquisition? The Yidden started going to Eretz Yisrael, to Tzfas. We have the Arizal, we have Ramesh HaKadavar, we have all the great Kabbalah, all the great Sfardim that emigrated from, and the Shulchan Aruch, Rabbi Yosef Karai, of course. Greatness in Torah develops after these periods. And of course, if we fast forward to more recent times, the Holocaust, Rachman Litzan, 6 million Anashim at top of Klai Yisrael were decimated over the course of a few years. And again, we should be complete. There should not be a Tish right now here at B'derech HaTeva. There shouldn't be any Torah in the world, B'derech HaTeva. We should have been done. HaKadosh Baruch Hu B'roiv Rachmanusai arranged the greatest resurgence of Torah since the Bayis Sheni. Maybe the Bayis Rishon. That you have so much Torah being learned today in Eretz Yisrael and in America and in Europe and South America. The whole world is going crazy. The whole world is learning Daf Yomi. The whole world is Kailim, Beis Yaakovs, Yeshiva Ketanis, day schools. Millions of Yidden from a Yidden are learning Torah throughout the world after the Holocaust. Coincidence? Absolutely not. It's this you say that from the moments of challenge come greatness. We find greatness within. And we find Yeshua within. And I believe that that's the aside why we don't say Tachanun on Tu B'Shvat. Because we asked, where's the Nes? Where's the Yeshua? The greatest Nes and the greatest Yeshua is precisely on Tu B'Shvat, if we understand this aside of Tu B'Shvat. It's the day that we're able to learn about history and about our own reality. That whenever we experience challenge, whenever things seem so bleak, you go outside, it's dark, it's gray, it's dead. No. At that moment precisely, today, is when the sap begins to bubble underneath the ground and it's coming alive. Because we've been challenged. We feel that there is an imminent danger, and when we feel that way, we respond with greatness. A yid doesn't break, a yid doesn't bend, a yid arises. A yid, like the sap in a tree, goes higher and higher, a yid steigs, because we feel that we have to. This is our mission. We can't die. Klal Yisrael is eternal, and we have to meet the challenge of eternity. And this is what our forefathers have done time and time again in every part of the world, whether it's B'nai Ashkenaz, B'nai Sfarad, wherever they may be at any time in history. The more you challenge a Yid, the more you try to break a Yid, the greater the Yid becomes. We're living right now in times that are unfathomable. If we would be able to understand what's really going on in the world, and we wouldn't hide in a bubble, maybe we have to for survival and to just be normal and to get through life, but if we would really be in touch with what is going on in the world as we speak, we would not be able to survive almost. Over the last couple of days, just on a personal note, I think many of you know, and I spoke about it a little bit at the VOD last night, I went through a 24-hour period. It wasn't, I'm not trying to, you know, make myself out into a tremendous Baal Yisurim, Baruch Hashem, I'm not. But for 24 hours, I had a kidney stone, and it was Yisurim Nairam. It was tremendous pain. But went to the hospital and got some morphine into me, and before you know it, I'm back in yeshiva, Baruch Hashem, as good as new. But when I was in this tremendous tsar, I was thinking, do you know there are people right now as we speak that are hostages in Gaza? Hundreds of hostages right now as we speak, as we're here, and they don't know if they're ever getting out. Their relatives have no idea if they're ever getting out. We don't know if they're alive or dead. We don't know what conditions. We know that they're hard conditions. We don't know how hard they are. And there's no Yaim, there's no Laila. They're in tunnels, dark, dingy. Imagine for yourself for 1 minute, just try to imagine what it's like for that person in that dungeon right now, in a tunnel deep in Gaza, with bombing all around, with terrorists, you know, doing who knows what to you, tormenting you and saying things to you and hurting you and possibly worse. And how do you like pass time? How do you, like, they're in over 100 days. Do you understand what 100 days is? They have no Svarim to learn from. They have no iPhone to look at. They have no, they have strangers with them in their cell. There's Arabs running around. How do you pass that time? Do you understand the psychological torture of 1 day? I have 1 day of torture that with all the creature comforts around me. And I couldn't bear it. I could not tolerate it. Imagine what's going on with people that are literally day after day in this masker, Hitzia mi masker nafshi. How do they do it? I have absolutely no idea how they survive, how they live for 1 day. And day turns into another day, into another day, and they're surviving. I don't know how. And then there are soldiers in the hospitals with limbs torn off. And they have to live with this for the rest of their life. They will always be maimed. They will always be injured and in pain and have to learn new skills. How do they do it? And then there are 1,200 people that were killed on Simchas Torah. Over 200 chayalim that were killed over the course of the war since Simchas Torah. 22 people killed in one incident 2 days ago. It's not possible to understand the tsara that Klal Yisrael is going through. We don't like looking at the news anymore. We've already maybe pushed it to the back of our mind. Many of us don't even want to read the news anymore. And we pretend that life is normal. It's not normal, Rabbi say. We're living in tremendously dark times. And we have to dive into the Rabbeinu Shlom. They should be matzil us. But you should understand that somehow, some way, if we're able to respond appropriately during these times, to daven like we should be davening, to say tilim like we should be, to acting like a mensch with other people, to not fight with other people, to raise the bar of who we are, to learn properly and to chazer properly and to just try to raise and elevate ourselves during this time, then we could emerge, and Klal Yisrael as a whole can emerge much, much stronger than we were before. We already see the seeds of it. We see the achdus that has come about as a result of Simchas Torah. Before Simchas Torah, last year, there was tremendous period in Klal Yisrael, in Eretz Yisrael, between the Chilonim and the Charedim, between the right and the left, and the protests and the marches and the Justice Department. Who knows what was going on in Eretz Yisrael? It was a terrible, terrible matzah. We were literally torn apart at the seam. And all of a sudden now you find that Chilonim and Charedim, Chasidim, and people with tattoos, Mechalei Shabbos and Litvish people, they're dancing together, they're eating together, they're keeping Shabbos together, they're putting on tefillin, they're wearing tzitzis. There's a hirur tshuva like we haven't seen maybe since the Six-Day War. There's already the sap coming into the trees in these dark times. And it's only going to get stronger. And we have to be part of Klal Yisrael. We have to also rise to the occasion like the sap inside and feel the renewal, feel the regeneration, the resurgence that is ripe at this time. You know, Peiros are a mashal for mitzvahs. Elu dvarim sha'adam eichel peirosein ba'olam hazeh. These are talking about mitzvahs. Peiros are like mitzvahs. And so I want to tell you two stories tonight that are negeya. They're two b'shvat in the sense that they're both negeya mitzvahs in the context of two bar mitzvah boys. Two bar mitzvah boys during this tkufa of time. And I think both of them are very inspirational stories, and I think both of them will bring the point home in a very clear way. The first story is a boy from Sderot. His name is Itai. And Itai was supposed to have his bar mitzvah on Simchas Torah of this year. And he prepared a whole year. His bar mitzvah day was Simchas Torah. He was going to lane the laning of Simchas Torah. And he was so excited. And all of his friends, all of his relatives were coming to Sderot for that Shabbos, Simchas Torah. And of course, we know what happened. There was no bar mitzvah because everybody had to go into hiding that morning. And Itai got very depressed. His family was moved out of Sderot. They were living, and they are living, in a hotel somewhere in Yerushalayim. A lot of the people are living in hotels throughout the country. Itai and his family are living in a hotel room in Yerushalayim. It sounds very luxurious. Imagine sitting in a hotel room, as fancy as it might be, for 100 days. It's not geschmack. Hotel is nice if it's a nice hotel, and you're there for a few days, and then you're able to go home again. You don't want to be stuck a whole family in a hotel room. That's not geschmack. Even with a big Israeli breakfast, I've been on many recruiting trips, and after 2 days of those Israeli breakfasts, chalas, just give me a cup of coffee and I'm good. But Itai was very depressed. How could HaKadosh Baruch Hu do this to me? How could he ruin my bar mitzvah? Does he not want to hear me lane? Is that what it's all about? Is that the message that I should take? And he was sitting depressed since Simchas Torah in his hotel room, and he was struggling with these philosophical issues. And there was a Rebbetzin who lived nearby, and she was a trauma specialist. And she came to the hotel, and she was asking the families in the lobby, is there anyone here that would like to speak to me, to talk to me about their problems? And, Israelis are very often very strong-minded and a little stubborn, and we're fine, go speak to some people in the hospital, we're good, we're going to be fine, we're going to tough it out, we're pushing through, we're good. She said, okay. And then somebody said, by the way, there's one boy that looks very sad, looks very depressed, he could probably use a schmooze with you. His name is Itai. And she tracked him down, and he asked all these questions to her, like, why did Hashem do it to me? How could he do it to me? Does he not want to hear me, Lane? What should I take? What's the takeaway? How could this happen? And he was crying, and she let him cry, and she let him speak to him as long as he needed to. But she said, tell me the story. Tell me exactly what happened that Shabbos. He said, I'll tell you. He said, my entire family converged on Sderot, my extended family, including my mother's brother, my dod Yossi, my uncle Yossi, who was a chayal, and he got a patur. He was supposed to be on active duty that Shabbos, but he got a patur to come to my bar mitzvah. And he came, he stayed in the house next door to ours, and he came in his uniform, and with his radio, with his gun, with his Uzi, and Shabbos morning, the davening, Simchas Torah morning, was supposed to be at 7:30 in the main shul. 6 o'clock in the morning, my uncle started hearing crackling on the radio, saying that there's been an infiltration, and he chapped that it was very nearby. And he went running out into the streets. He told his sister, do not let anyone out of the house. Everyone should go into hiding, into the shelters. He went from house to house, and he went to the shul. The gabbai was about to open up the door of the main shul where the bar mitzvah was supposed to be. And he says, keep the doors locked and say, nobody is allowed to come in. There's been an infiltration, and we have to take care of the problem first. Let everybody stay at home. And then the Arabs taka came into Sderot. There was some, and the IDF were able to push back against them. There was a lot of fighting, intense fighting. But ultimately, the IDF was able to kill the terrorists, and Baruch Hashem, that whole community, Itai's family, etc., were saved that day. So the Rebbetzin says to Itai, she says, let's reframe what happened. Instead of looking at it like it was a klala, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu sent this whole incident, the whole Simchas Torah tragedy on your bar mitzvah, because of your bar mitzvah, your entire community was saved. If not for your bar mitzvah, your uncle wouldn't be in town. If your uncle wasn't going to be in town, you wouldn't have any idea that there was an infiltration. Your entire city would have looked like all the other communities, all the other settlements that were near Sderot that were completely, you know, eviscerated during that Simchas Torah day in terrible, hard, unspeakable atrocities. And you were saved, your whole community was saved because of you. And all of a sudden, she saw there was a sparkle in his eye. He was makabel. The next day, she came back, and he was alive again. And he was playing with his friends, and he was no longer depressed. He was invigorated. His bar mitzvah was the catalyst of saving everybody's life. The sap came up through the darkness of times. The worst of days in Israeli history was a time that the sap began to rise. This turnabout came about with the realization that it's precisely in times of great challenge and great struggle that we become stronger. There's another story that's told about another bar mitzvah boy during this tkufa. There is a Judaica store somewhere in Eretz Yisrael that's owned by a person called Noam. He's a Sfardi Balabayas, and he had a Sfarim store, and he did a lot of personalized embroidery of talis bags, of tefillin bags. And he had, on the day of Simchas Torah, he and everyone else were in total shock. For the next few days, he didn't go back to his store because there were no people on the streets. Everybody was in mourning. Everybody was in shock. Nobody was going to shop at all. And finally, after a week or so, he comes back to his store and he starts trying to take care of the outstanding orders. And he looks through a whole pile of personalized talis bags, tefillin bags, yarmulkes, whatever it was on his desk in the store. And he sees that one tefillin bag was for a bar mitzvah boy. His name is Yagel Yaakov, and he sees that he's from kibbutz Nir Oz. Nir Oz is one of the kibbutzim that suffered tremendous losses on Simchas Torah, very near the border with Gaza, and the Hamasniks, Yimach Shemam Mezichram, came in, and they did terrible, terrible things in Kibbutz Nir Oz. And they took a lot of hostages from there. And he had a bad feeling, Noam, about this boy. Like, something was off. Nir Oz, a boy, and he didn't hear from the mother, from the parents, nothing, no follow-up. But there was a phone number on the receipt, and he calls the number, and the mother picks up, and he says, you know, there was an order placed. I'm Noam from the Judaica store, bar mitzvah boy, Yagel Yaakov. What's the story? So she says, you know, unfortunately, my son, Yagel Yaakov, and his brother, his older brother, and his father were all taken hostage on Simchas Torah, and haven't spoken to him, haven't heard from him. His bar mitzvah is in about a month, but a month and a half, but I haven't heard from him. He's deep in Gaza somewhere. So he says, I'm sorry. He says, I'll give you a full discount on the order. I understand. I'm very sorry. I'm going to daven for him. She says, what are you talking? Ma pitom. What do you mean a discount on the order? He's going to be home. He's going to come home any day. And he's going to have his bar mitzvah. And he's going to need his tefillin bag with his tefillin in it. And you're going to send it to me ASAP. You're going to send it to me right away. I need it for the bar mitzvah. And he was like, thinking to himself, you know, this woman is out of her mind. I mean, that's not happening. At this time, the IDF didn't even go into Gaza yet. It was still early in the right after Simchas Torah. They didn't yet move in to push into Gaza. And there was no chance in anyone's mind that any hostages would be returned at this point. And he didn't want to burst her bubble. So he said, okay, fine. And he sent it to her. And they finished the transaction. So what happened was that Erev his bar mitzvah, on the 53rd day of his captivity, he was freed. Him and his brother were freed. His father is still there, but him and his brother were freed. He was returned to Eretz Yisrael, to his mother's arms. He was sitting in the hospital, recuperating from his trauma, and they had a small bar mitzvah party in the hospital room, and he put on his tefillin for the first time there. The amazing PS of this story is that on the 53rd day of his being hostage, when he was freed, the corresponding Kapitel Tehillim, Kapitel Nun Gimel, 53rd chapter of Tehillim, ends with the following pasuk: Miyitein mitzion Yeshuas Yaakov, who will give for Tzion the Yeshua, the salvation of Yaakov? Where in Eretz Yisrael are we going to be able to find any Yeshua for Yaakov? B'shuv elikim shavus amai. The answer is when HaKadosh Baruch Hu returns the captives of his nation, shavus amai. Yogel Yaakov, Yismach Yisrael. Yogel Yaakov, that was the bar mitzvah boy's name. On the 53rd day of his captivity when he was freed, the 53rd kapitel of Tehillim, speaking about how there's going to be evil perpetrated in the world, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, we need your Yeshua. And the pasuk, the kapitel ends with this amazing pasuk: Mi yitein mitziyein Yeshua is Yaakov. How are we going to find in Eretz Yisrael the Yeshua for Yaakov? B'shuv elekim shvus amai, when HaKadosh Baruch Hu will return the captives of his nation, Yogel Yaakov, then Yaakov will rejoice, Yismach Yisrael, Klal Yisrael will be happy again. The greatest Yeshua comes from those moments of tsar. The tsara breeds salvation. It's not a contradiction. It actually is the agitator. It's the catalyst to bring about great hope for Klal Yisrael. When we have in our personal lives tsaras, and it's horrible, whether it's physical, it's mental, it's financial, it's emotional, it's social, whatever with family issues, whatever we have, we all have issues. Every single person in this room has issues galore. Those are blessings. You could look at it as your greatest crutch, or you can look at it as your greatest salvation. The greatest hope is when things look so dark, feel so empty in our lives, we feel isolated, alone, pained. Understand that at that moment is exactly the moment of greatest growth. If you react normally to it, and you respond well to it, and you're able to push through, and be able to endure the pain for the moment, understand that there will be greatness following it very shortly. Precisely because we've lived through the hardship, we're able to experience great Yeshua. Yogel Yaakov Yismach Yisrael. Tu B'Shvat, today is a day that we could tap into this. The darkest times in our lives is now, but understand that there's sap running under us, through us, in our veins, that will enable us to be greater people at the end. Klal Yisrael is already a greater nation. It's just going to get greater. You have to bet on Klal Yisrael every time that there is this down thing, that we have tsaris, and the whole world is against us, and there's anti-Semitism galore. and in college campuses and on streets of Manhattan and in Chicago and in Los Angeles and everywhere in the world, there's massive demonstrations against Klal Yisrael. All of a sudden, the whole world loves terrorism. All of a sudden, the whole world doesn't understand what happened on Simchas Torah. All they see is the reaction of the Jewish people. Don't bet against Klal Yisrael. Always bet on the side of Klal Yisrael, precisely in these moments. Because if you're on the coattails of Klal Yisrael, if you ride with Klal Yisrael during these times, you will see tremendous yeshuas. We will see as an aftermath of this melchama, as an aftermath of this great crisis that we're living in, we have to feel the tzaris, but from those tzaris are going to come great yeshuas. And that's the nes and the yeshua of Tu B'Shvat. That's why there's no tachanun, and that's why it's such a special night to spend together, us as a yeshiva, together, with beautiful music and delicious food and a great ruach. And stick around after these words are over. Don't run out. If you can, stay, and you'll hear more beautiful music and more hisairis from the guitar, from the violin, and from our souls. These are moments that we have to cherish. Tu B'Shvat is a day that we can really relate to this year, perhaps more than any in the recent past, because it's so dark and it's so dreary and it's so scary. But at that moment is when the greatest growth occurs.